Hello and welcome to Community Forum. I'm Ellen Lockyer. Today we'll be talking about one of Anchorage's service organizations that's been around for more than 50 years, longer than statehood. The Arc of Anchorage is a resource for the families of and those with developmental disabilities, behavioral problems, and deafness. So let's say hello to our guests first. Gwen Lee is Executive Director of the Arc of Anchorage. Hi, Gwen.
Hi. Thank you for having us.
Okay. It's a pleasure to have you. And Patty Saunders is the Arc's Development Director. Hello, Patty.
Hi. It's good to be here.
Okay. It's good to have you both. So let's start with let's start at the beginning. I understand that the ARC got its start in Anchorage about 1957 with some concerned parents. So it's really a grassroots kind of organization, eh?
Very much so. We always like to say we're older than Alaska was a state. Mm-hmm. But in the same way that the ARC of Anchorage was born with parents who wanted an alternative for their sons and daughters, that was happening across the entire country. We are not unlike our sister chapters of the ARC in every state that had parents come together because they wanted an alternative. In Alaska in 1957, we weren't a state. If a child with a disability was born into your family, your only alternative was to send that child to the lower 48, off to an institution. And in those days, we didn't have the kind of air travel or connections. And so families really thought that wasn't such a very good idea. And even though there weren't services in the territory at that time, they were determined, like parents are, that solve problems. They were determined to create those services. So they banded together. They made and sold candles to light a way for a child.
No kidding.
They operated out of the military Quonset huts, which were aplenty up here. They opened a little thrift store downtown. They were creative about trying to pull together resources to meet the needs of the family member that they decided was going to stay here in Alaska.
And those needs, though, would be medical counseling as well as actual equipment.
Absolutely. They were all the full array of services because we didn't have special education at mm-hmm. that time anywhere in the United States. And so families had their other children going off to school, and they might have one child with a disability that they had to completely figure out how to serve all day long without having an educational component, without having the medical kinds of services they might need or equipment. And so they learned a lot from each other.
Must have been very tough. I can't even, was it Nixon was in the White House at that point? 57? Come on, quick.
Which one of us knows that?
Eisenhower.
I don't remember, but I can't even imagine how difficult it would have been in those days for someone who had a child with severe
right.
disabilities.
I think post-World War II, certainly there were returning veterans who had disabilities, which brought a lot of attention to the disability field. And then we had the Kennedys. They brought a lot of attention to the world of disabilities because it can hit anyone. It doesn't matter what your political party or social economic race. It can be anyone. A disability at birth can occur for any family.
Well, there's a lot of changes since now. Was the Alaska movement part of a national trend?
Yes. Okay. Yes. The Arc of Anchorage is actually a chapter of the Arc of the United States. That's the one thing that sets the Arc apart from some of our sister agencies, is that we have that connection to an organization that is all across the United States. Much advocacy was done by the Arc of the United States convening in Washington and working very hard on Public Law 94-142, which was Education for All Handicapped Act. One of the first things that parents wanted was the right for their children to attend public school. That was very important to them. And once that was accomplished, they just moved right on. It was the Rehabilitation Act, which meant that everyone would have access to jobs and other supports that were ordinarily available in the community, followed by the one many people are familiar with, the Americans with Disabilities Act. We started to see curb cuts and doors that opened by a push lever. We started to be more aware that The need for accessibility in our communities was important on many fronts. And now, of course, we have the aging population, all of which are benefiting from progress that has been made in the disability field.
You know, I think I'm thinking back to my elementary school days and assuming that many of the children with special needs were not seen in the schools. They were at home or in an institution. In my elementary school, there was one little girl.
That's right.
And she was a plucky little thing. She had braces, must have been polio braces on both legs.
Right.
But she was the only one I ever saw.
Right. And that was typical. Some schools allowed children with disabilities to come to school. The story is, if your child could eat a brown paper bag lunch and was toilet trained and a kind teacher was in the building and you could get up the stairs, you might be able to be in that building.
Wow. So let's fast forward to today. What are the needs of some of the people with disabilities and their families in Anchorage? What kind of services do you provide?
Well, we have a whole array of services, beginning from the point that a family first learns that their family member has a disability. It could be that it's at birth in the hospital. We have a team of nurses that make rounds every week and meet new families with that first diagnosis and begin to provide that information about what do I do now. There's that wonderful story of a family that has planned their whole life to go to France, and they have bought the tickets, and they've read the guidebooks, and they have all this exciting plan that they're what they're going to do when they get to France, and they get on the plane, and it lands in Holland. And they're so disappointed at first because they had planned for France. They had planned for those museums. They had planned that language, that food, those trips. But when they get off the plane in Holland and they move around, they discover that Holland's a pretty wonderful place, too. And there are tulips and there are windmills and there are wonderful things to do in Holland. And a parent is first very disappointed that this child is not going to be all that they had hoped and imagined and dreamed and planned for. But once they begin to learn that that particular family member is unique and special, that's exactly the aura that comes on. They wouldn't trade their situation for anything. They wouldn't wish it on anybody, but they also wouldn't trade it for anything. And so that information that you need as a parent early on is all about, what do I do? How do I best parent this member of my family that may have some special needs that I haven't got a clue how to deal with? So the ARC is there to help introduce you to the service system, which can be very complex. How do I get services? What services do I need? How do I negotiate early intervention? Where do I find out about school? What do I do? And so it's walking along with parents from that first moment across the lifespan, because we do serve people from birth through the lifespan. Sometimes families come to us from another state. The child is already in school or at some point in the spectrum, and their needs are, what's happening in Alaska? How do I get connected to Alaska services? Or we also get calls from moms and dads that have kept their son or daughter home with them, and all of a sudden, they have a health issue. They can't do what they have done for the last 45 or 50 years, and now they need help, and they don't know where to start. So the questions come all ages, all kinds of needs. Every person is individual. Every family is individual and unique. We just start with where they are.
It's pretty amazing, and I'm going to direct this to Patty. How do you pay for all this? The simple question.
Well, that's a great question. We started out, Gwen said, as an all-volunteer organization that raised money by selling candles or used clothing. And a lot of the services over the years were done by volunteers. And that was in an era when moms stayed home and dads went off to work. So there were a lot of moms who could volunteer. Since then, we've gotten a bit smarter about how to provide services, and we now have professional trained staff who can help folks. They don't have to guess anymore. We've gotten pretty smart. So we need a different sort of revenue stream. And early on, it was a lot of grants from both government agencies and foundations and whatnot. Today, most of the services that we provide are funded through Medicaid, which is a combination of federal and state money. And we're very, very grateful for that. But there are limits to what that can be spent on. And so my job as development director is to find people in the community who share our vision for the folks we serve and are willing to contribute their time, talent, or treasure. And we use that to supplement what Medicaid will pay for so that people can have a completely full, rounded life and that there aren't any missing pieces.
Well, you may not be selling candles anymore, but I still get those calls every month to bring out my old clothes.
Right. And you know, a lot of people only know the ARC by those calls. When we say we work at the ARC, people say, oh, you're the ones that call me every month. But they really don't know what we do. Mm-hmm. And we do take those used clothes and household goods, and we turn them into cash for the ARC through our relationship with Value Village. And that is an important supplement to the funding stream. It is actually business revenue for us, because many times people have no funding. They would otherwise not get services, and the ARC does want to be able to provide information, basic respite to families, services that otherwise would not be able to be given.
Well, I did not know about your relationship with Value Village. I have to laugh. I always get those calls. They always call right about 9 in the morning, and I am running out the door trying to get to work. And it's nice. And when I do have drop-offs, I drop them in those boxes.
In the bins,
in the
right.
bins. But
we're very appreciative. We are thrilled when people do remember us and clean out their closets in the spring and in the fall, and we will come to your home and pick that up, or the conveniently located bins throughout the community.
Do you have anything to throw? I'm wearing my old clothes, I always want to say.
We say you can't have a birthday or Christmas without giving up something in your closet.
Oh, I'm going to clean that closet as soon as I go home.
Good.
I've been meaning to do it for months. So we touch on a couple of really important things. I want to put the Medicaid question on hold for a minute, because, of course, the moratorium will impact you. But first I want to get at, are you a supplement to state services? Are you totally private, or how does that work?
We are called a private nonprofit. We actually are the state's service arm. The state, in many cases, doesn't provide direct services other than through the Pioneer Home, I believe, is a state service. But they don't engage in these direct community services themselves. So the money flows through the state to a whole array of service providers that provide the service.
So how do people pay? Is there a sliding scale, or is there services to people?
First starts
pay?
With eligibility. Every mm-hmm. person has to become eligible based on need. And then depending on the situation, sometimes we all know that there are co-pays for your drugs when you go to the drugstore. So every situation is a little bit different. But typically, if you are eligible, the state has a responsibility to provide a basic core of services to people, just like education. They only are obligated to pay up to the level that they have money, which is why for school, everyone can go to school. But when you graduate from school, you may not get services as an adult because the state has a limited amount of money. So they've created a wait list, and there are over 1,000 people on the wait list for community-based services. Mm-hmm. And people can't afford, typically, to buy their own.
And then how does the moratorium on Medicaid play into
that? That's exactly where the moratorium comes in, because the moratorium halted all new services. So while the state was beginning to take people off that wait list and put them in services, 50 people per quarter or up to 200 people per year, that was halted. So no new person can get a service if they're falling in the category of waivered services. And a waiver is just a term for you're eligible for institutional placement, but you want community-based services. Those are halted at this time. That's children with complex medical conditions, children in the hospital just born that want to be able to go home but may need some support. Their family may need additional staff because of the medical needs of that child. It's the older Alaskans, seniors who need more support than seniors with Alzheimer's, dementia, who need more support. Their families are beginning to discover that mom can't manage like she used to. That's a waiver service. There's Alaskans with physical disabilities who need extra support. And then the MRDD, which is old language for a developmental disability population. Those four categories of people are frozen or unable to receive services at this time.
And meanwhile, while they're frozen, newer people are joining.
That's
at the
right.
end of the line.
That's right. That waiting list is growing.
Mm-hmm.
Every day, the waiting list is growing.
So if you had 1,000 people on the waiting list, it would take 5 years even to get them placed.
At the same time, new ones are being born every day.
Mm-hmm.
Or the other thing we haven't actually mentioned is that the disability population is one of the largest minorities in this country. And it's a group that you can join at any time. You can join at birth. You can join as a result of either injury or illness that causes some problems for people. And so there's a number of ways to join that population that needs the kind of services that the ARC and our sister agencies provide. And unfortunately, you do have to go through this eligibility process and get in line, wait your turn.
That must be very frustrating and discouraging to some people.
It's very hard for families. One of the most challenging right now is the new disability of traumatic brain injury. It's not really new, but it can come at any time in your life where you can have a brain injury, typically a car accident, a motorcycle accident, some injury to the head that leaves you with physical disabilities. It may leave you with some cognitive disabilities, a need for support in your life. And the really unusual and unfair kind of thing that happens, if that disability occurs before the age of 22, you can get into the system. If it occurred after the age of 22, you cannot. And that's something that the system is working on. The system just is not perfect. It's better than it used to be, and it's aware of all of these nuances. But those are the things that families don't always understand. They need help navigating the system, figuring out how do I get eligible for what I might need. How can we reach out to those families and help them?
Mm-hmm. Now, I want to get into the nitty-gritty of services you actually provide over there at the ARC. But first, I'd like to remind our listeners that Community Forum is a call-in program. And you can dial in at 550-8433, 550-8433, if you'd like to make a comment or ask a question of our guests. Outside the Anchorage Bowl, you can dial 1-888-353-5752. That's 1-888-353-5752, or email us at communityforum@kska.org. And again, you can check kska.org, our website, for information about today's show. We are talking about the ARC of Anchorage, the services it provides, the wonders that it does, and the problems it is facing. Our guests are Gwen Lee and Patty Saunders. So, and I'm Ellen Lockyer. So let's get either of you jump in at this point. Mm-hmm. What's a typical day like at the ARC? Is there a typical day at the ARC?
The easy answer to that is there is no typical day. And the reason for that is that we pride ourselves on serving each person as an individual. And so it's everything to do with their needs and as well their goals and dreams for their life. So it's not like you pick one from column A and two from column B and that's what you get. We sit down with a team of people, technical people, professional people, as well as members of the family and others who are vitally interested in the outcome for this person, as well as the person themselves. And we say, what do you want? Some people might want to get a job. Some people don't for whatever reason or can't for whatever reason. So our services, we're not going to force somebody to get a job if it's not going to work for them. Just like you wouldn't make somebody go bowling if they hated bowling and they said, I'd rather go skating. So everything is individualized. Now, within that, of course, there are some typical things. But if you think of your life or my life or anybody else's life in the neighborhood, that's what a typical day looks like for the people we serve. You know, they get up. They want to live in a nice house or a nice place, whether it's a house or not. They want to have friends and neighbors. They want to be able to see their family. They want to have interesting things to do. They want to be able to go to school and be educated. They probably, when they grow up, want a job. And then what do most of us do when we're done with our job? We either want to go home and have dinner with our friends or roommates, or we want to go out and have some fun, do something that has some relationship to our interests, whether that's the Harley Davidson Club or the beading, knitting, quilting group. So we try to figure out what makes sense for people, what they're able to do, what we can help them to do, what they need support to do, and make that possible for them. It's not our job to tell them what their life should look like.
Do clients live at the ARC, or is there special housing, or do they live at home and come over there?
All of the above. Nobody lives at the ARC, so to speak. We have an office building where our staff that are providing support can access a telephone and a computer, and we can have meeting space. The ARC does own an array of homes and apartments in the community, but we also lease and rent we provide support in the homes that they would choose to live in. We provide support in the homes of families where people live, because we serve such a wide variety of ages and needs. But and even your original question, a day at the ARC could be a wide variety of different kinds of service program people responding to the calls that come in. The family that has just found out and needs information. Another individual that has decided he'd like to have a job, and how can he meet with the team, the job developer, to help him get a job. The individual that doesn't like where they're living right now, or their roommate, and would really rather live somewhere else. The family that needs some care for their person coming home after school because they can't cover those hours in the day. Or the family that's going to be out of town for 2 weeks and needs what we call respite for 2 weeks, so that they can take a trip that otherwise they would not. So there's all these variety of issues, and as Patty said, we're dealing with them one by one, person by person, each staff in their own way.
So do your staff have a specific clients each, or how does that work?
Yes, typically staff have what you'd call a caseload, 15 or 20 people that they're dealing with, and they would be you'd specifically have one person that you might talk to.
Mm-hmm. The one thing we haven't mentioned that is a hallmark of our organization, always has been, we have what is often called the rec center. It's a combination of recreation and life skills. And the idea is that people with disabilities learn things their whole lives in the same way that the rest of the population does. They might learn different things, and they might learn differently. They may learn more slowly or more hands-on, less reading or that sort of thing. But if we can combine fun and learning, it works better in both regards. And so we have an extensive array of recreational classes, life skills classes, and community activities, because our goal is for people to get out in the community, enjoy what Anchorage and Alaska has to offer. Mm. And we are the only organization in town that has that full array of recreation and life skills services.
When you talk about life skills, can you broaden that definition a little
bit?
Sure.
That's kind of easy in some ways. I mean, you know, we have first aid classes and we have cooking classes, and, you know, there's a certain way to be when you go to a coffee shop, and there's a different way to be when you're in a bowling alley. And people learn that by doing that, by going to coffee shops, by going to bowling alleys, or going to the movies, or going to a museum show. There are social skills that are involved in that. And as well, there are, you know, just being in that place. And then there's relationship skills, friendship skills, and maybe even boyfriend-girlfriend skills. And then there's self-care skills, like I said, first aid, or how to get yourself to the bus stop and not get lost, get on the right bus. There's all kinds of skills that people need to get through. And most of us pick those things up somewhere along the way, either formally or informally, most of us. And the folks we serve, typically, you have to actually focus on the acquisition of that skill and break it down and teach them step by step and repeat it until it's firmly grasped. So
we know learning occurs in lots of different environments. So when you talk about life skills and you're living in a home, it's getting up, being able to take a bath and wash your hair and rinse the conditioner out, and how much of the breakfast can you put together, and how much do you need a little help with, and then getting around town. You may need some help with mobility. You may need some help with money. You may need some help with eating. You may need some help with shopping. So all of the things that we just take for granted from the moment you get up until you go to bed, including the fun things to do, often require for a person with a disability a little bit of support to be able to fully engage in the community, and that's what we do. I was also going to mention that we do partner with the City Parks and Recs Department. That's one of the ways that we're able to offer through the Arctic Resource Center, the Recreation Center, a full array of support and fun for people in the community. Yeah. The weekly dance, the monthly dance on a Friday night, bingo on Tuesday night. We're also home to Sleeping Lady Drummers. They practice in our gym, and they are very welcoming to people with disabilities to come around the drum. So all of those things are just happening because we have the wonderful facility on the ARC grounds. But nobody actually lives on those ARC grounds. They live in regular homes in all of the neighborhoods throughout the community.
Okay. You said you partnered with Anchorage Parks and Rec. How about the Anchorage School District? Is there an affiliation there or any kind of connection there?
Well, we certainly provide support to our families who are engaging in getting what we call that individual educational plan for the child in the school. So they're a partner on the team. The support that's provided in school is the school district's responsibility, and ours is ours. We do have a special relationship around the state school for the deaf because the ARC does the residential component for that. Students who experience deafness anywhere in the state of Alaska at one point by eligibility could attend the state school for the deaf. And if the family chooses to have that happen and send their son or daughter to Anchorage, we would provide the residential component for that. So then we work very closely with the team around that particular child and their IEP, as well as stay connected with the family back in the village that they've come from.
So, you know, a lot of people who do have a hearing loss or deafness would not consider themselves disabled.
That's right. And that's part of that eligibility. Just because you have a disability, I'm sitting here with glasses on, or you mentioned someone with a hearing disability, that doesn't make you automatically eligible for our services because, back to what Patty said about life functions, it has to impair your ability to do everyday activities to the degree where you need support to make it happen.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about people who have more substantial need for support, developmental disability, cognitive impairment, a serious mental illness.
People who may be in a wheelchair all the time, or people who are not ambulatory, would need a special bus. I know there's a little child down the corner from me who goes to school, but yes. Every day the bus comes and it kneels or something. It gets down on the ground level.
Great technology these days.
Yeah,
right.
And
great
they
technology.
Bring him in his motorized wheelchair.
And the more the school and the community can do to help that family, help that child gain as many skills as possible, the more apt when they become an adult that they will need less help.
Mm-hmm. How about the parents? You were mentioning, Gwen, a little earlier about sometimes people expecting a child and you don't expect to get a child with special needs, and you have to sort of alter you're thinking of what the destination's going to be mm-hmm. like. I mean, do you get a lot of parents who are just very, very just overwhelmed?
Families of individuals with disabilities come in all shapes, sizes, cultures, and abilities, just like the rest of us. The ability to parent, we're not ever taught how to parent. Some families do very well, thank you, and they come in armed as advocates, full of information. We have the computer age, and they know exactly what they need and want, and they're right there. Other families need a little more support and a little more guidance, and we need to walk alongside them a little closer. But our job is to meet with families and take them from where they are to the next point. Even though we can see, based on our experience, what might be down the road for them, we just work with them where they are at the time they are and move on to the next step.
The other thing that's true is that there are sometimes, for an assortment of reasons, families who are not able to take care of their child with a disability, particularly complex medical conditions. This frequently happens when the family is from the bush and there aren't the support services there. There may not be a source of reliable clean water or reliable electricity. And if the child needs a G-tube and a trach and a breathing machine and whatnot, it may not be safe for them to be in the community. Or they may have needs to be close to the doctor or the hospitals for multiple surgeries or medical procedures. And so one of the things that the ARC does is find families here in town who are willing to serve as therapeutic foster families. They're specially trained to meet the needs of that particular child. And the child can live here in town, close to the hospital, close to the doctors. And there's always, the possibility of reunification with their family as their situation changes. But sometimes it's just too much for parents, and they need a little extra help in that regard. So we do that mm-hmm. as well.
And that also happens with families that try their best for a while and eventually emotionally just get to the point where they would break if they they kept on. And so we try to figure out how to give families a break. Sometimes it's shared parenting. 2 days where you don't have to deal with a really behaviorally challenged child and someone else is parenting with you, shared parenting, 5 days on and 2 days off. There are all kinds of arrangements that we can do to help preserve that biological family, to support them, and eventually that's the very best. But we always say, the divorce rate in this country is astronomical, but the divorce rate for parents who are working with a child with a disability, it's over 80%. It is just that extra stressor that makes it very difficult to survive as a family.
Oh, I did not know that. Well, we'll hold on to that thought. Let's go to break. You are listening to Community Forum on KSK. Welcome back to Community Forum. I'm Ellen Lockyer. Today our guests are Gwen Lee, Executive Director of the ARC of Anchorage, and Patty Saunders, who serves as the financial person who does the development director. Mm-hmm. That means raising money.
That's exactly right. What it means.
So before the break, we were talking about maybe the stresses that having a child with severe developmental needs could have on a marriage. You were saying, Gwen, that the divorce rate is 80%?
Yes, it's pretty astronomical. It is it's a lot to consider. Parenting is a challenge for all of us, but parenting a child with special needs often takes away from the relationship that a husband and wife need. There is absolutely no time to work on your own relationship. The other children take a lot of time, and so those are the things that often break families apart. We know that if we can provide respite, which is just a break from that intense parenting responsibility, we can preserve marriages. And that's one of the big things that the ARC likes to do, is try to be sure that each family is receiving a little bit of respite so mom has time to go shopping without having to worry about what do you do with this 12-year-old that may need some support, this 30-year-old that may still need some support. You have no time for yourself when someone needs 24-hour sight and sound kind of support from you.
Is that Is there we talked also earlier about the end of the institutionalization of children and adults with developmental disabilities, but would there be instances in which you would counsel a family to perhaps seek out a home or somebody, another caregiver?
Ultimately, that, of course, is their decision, but we are there to help them find that other family, to help them find that alternative living arrangement. When the child, typically our children at age 18 can't wait to be gone. They can't wait to leave us. But at age 18 or at age 21, individuals with disabilities often can't do that, and the family is still providing intense support way beyond the years when other married couples are now having a good time together. So how do we help them think about a different kind of arrangement? And those are very different as well, whether it be you try a residential kind of program, you maybe introduce another family to help provide some of that support. Very hard to let go. The transition of sending your child off to kindergarten, which happened this week, is one of the biggest times a mom cries. And then they cry when they go into high school, and then they cry when they graduate. Well, with a child with a disability, when the school years end and you can stay in school up through the age of 21 with special education, that's a real dropping off point, because there aren't necessarily a whole cadre of services. You've had your child go to school 5 days a week, and with all the problems that might have been, it's just like falling off a cliff, because now you're responsible 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. So that's often when families need to say, what else is there? What's the next step? Well, that's when you step in and say, we need to create a life for the individual going to think about a job. The other kids get jobs, so we have employment opportunities. People with disabilities are great workers.
Hold that thought, too, because I'm going to remind our listeners that this community forum is a call-in show. And if you have questions or comments, you can call 550-8433. 550-8433, outside the Anchorage area, 1-888-353-5752. That's 1-888-353-5752. Or email us at communityforum@kska.org. By the way, you can check out information on the ARC at KSKA's website, kska.org. There will be links to all the information you need about today's show. And while I'm on the subject, we repeat at 10 o'clock tonight. Community Forum is recorded, and we air it again at 10, but do not call in at 10 because there won't be anyone here to answer the phones. So, Gwen, you were saying that, say, a child, a young adult really with developmental disabilities is out of the school system, back in the home. What, and the parents are going, well, what do I do now?
Right. What's how do next? I create a meaningful day?
And how do you create a meaningful day? You were talking about jobs. Mm-hmm. What kinds of jobs?
Based on the individual, their interests and desires, the first thing we do is hook them up with someone that can do what we call an assessment, getting to know the person to figure out what are they gifted at, what are their interests, what might they like to do. And then we go from there. And people work all over the community. We have people that turn out to be very reliable and dependable in entry-level jobs that employers are saying, where have you been keeping this workforce? I have all kinds of people turn over in that job all the time. And now I have somebody that stays in the job and is happy because they're very successful doing repetitive kinds of things in entry-level jobs in any workplace. We love to have the ability to go into a workplace and just see all the jobs that are possible that you may have other people doing. And you can free up your professional staff to do those kinds of duties and at the same time find a job opportunity for a person with a disability. It's a real bottom line win-win for the employer. And that's just part of a meaningful day. The day may also include some teaching in the life skill area that we were talking about. When you have that first apartment, you have to learn how to do your laundry. You may not have learned that at home, or mom might not have been too successful teaching you, like teenagers, you know. Cooking and shopping and managing your money. And there's all the activities of where I live and how do I take care of that arrangement.
And would a person such as you're describing make enough money to be self-sufficient, or could he or she be self-sufficient, or would they live in a group home, or how would that work?
The funding for – and that, a couple questions buried in that one. If a person gets a job, they're going to earn a wage, and that will go into their economic stream. Often people with serious developmental disabilities are eligible for what we call SSI, or a supplement, because their disability isn't going to allow them to earn a wage sufficient enough to meet all their living expenses. So we have – support and information and education to help people figure out what is the impact of working on my individual. I don't want them to lose their Medicaid medical coverage, because that's critical. But people can work, and the SSI system is set up in such a way that it won't harm that. But sometimes people don't know that. But where you turn in terms of being able to pay rent, that's a whole nother host of information. There are places with subsidized housing. People can live together and pay rent together, just like you would if you were
College roommates.
College roommates. So there's such an array of possibilities. It isn't the end of the world. It's actually the beginning of the next journey that you didn't know was possible for your loved one.
And it does seem that, I'm sorry, I don't mean to interrupt Patty out, just to spew this out, it does seem like attitudes have completely changed. Not completely. I'm sure we've got a long way to go, but you know, since the last couple of decades,
significantly. And I think it's people with disabilities that have taught us. All of us at first thought that people with disabilities could only work in a sheltered workshop, that they couldn't possibly have the ability to work in the community, and so we created sheltered workshops, and we had one here in Anchorage. It's now the Assets Building, but that was Anchorage's sheltered workshop, where contract work was provided. Employers would give work to that particular place, and I think we put together phones. That was the first thing that people did, the components of phones. But we learned, because people with disabilities told us they wanted jobs in the community, just like people with disabilities have told us they don't want to live together in an institution. You ask people in institutions which are still in existence in the lower 48, they will say they want to live in the community. And so it's been up to us to kind of catch up. We can provide this community life for people. It's all about us learning how to listen and creatively find those answers.
And it's also about people who are not disabled changing their viewpoint.
And that's completely happened with, I think, the advent of special education. Some of us who didn't have the opportunity to go to school with kids with disabilities didn't learn how to be friends with them, whereas now that's happening regularly. So the employers of the future are now employers today. They've been going to school with these kids since 1973. That's 37, almost 40 years. They're now the employers who went to school with someone with a disability, and they were friends, and they realized that they could hire them.
One of the really gratifying things about this community, Anchorage, is that Alaskans are always, we pride ourselves on thinking for ourselves and being independent and not doing it the way they do things in the lower 48. And we found that the employers in Anchorage have been very open to the possibility of hiring the people we serve. And not just in the traditional ways. I mean, where you would expect to find people with disabilities is in the janitorial crews and folding pizza boxes or napkins in a restaurant. And we do have some of that. But we also have people in an amazing array of jobs and workplaces here in this town, because the employers are willing to give it a shot and take a chance and see what they can make work. And we'll work with them. I mean, what our job coaches do is teach the people we serve the skills they need, but we also work with the employers to teach them what they need. So you'll find people with disabilities in just about every kind of work there is to be had in this city.
Do you have any idea how many of the ARC's clients are working out there in the greater Anchorage area?
I know we have at least 50 or 60 individuals working.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Plus, the ARC practices what it preaches, and we hire people with disabilities. And what we say to them is, this is your first job, just like a lot of people do newspapers or babysit or work at McDonald's. But we'll give you your first job so you kind of learn those skills about listening to your supervisor and showing up on time and being appropriate. And once you've mastered that, after about 6 months, we're going to give you a job in the community because we're learning about what you like. We're getting to know you in a better way. So it's not your permanent job, but as much as we hate to say goodbye to folks, we get them into the community as quickly as possible because that's where relationships happen.
So it is possible for an adult with even a severe developmental disability to live on his or her own.
Yes.
For, you know, extended years, for years and years.
Yes. And often, though, with some support. And it's that level of support that has to be determined one by one.
And you mentioned earlier that the ARC had some housing available. I mean, are there criteria for taking advantage of that housing, or what would that
be? I think the biggest thing is to be friends with someone else. It's compatibility. We try to have people live together who like each other and like to get along together. And so there's once you master that, if you have the funding, and that's that magical service component that we have to help you achieve, then we figure out how to meet your what we call residential needs. It may be that you live in an apartment. It may be that you continue to live with your family, but we come in and provide some support. Or it may be that you live in a what we still call a residential group home where you need somebody there overnight. And then on the far end of the spectrum is people who have the most intense support needs, somebody who's even awake at night, someone because of your mobility impairments has to be there to help you get out of the house in the event of an emergency because you couldn't do that yourself. So there's a spectrum of support that can be wrapped around a person so that they can enjoy community life.
One of the things I talk about when I'm talking to community members is that developmental disabilities, there's an entire range of disability and ability combined. And so it may be that a person qualifies as having a developmental disability, but they only need a little bit of help. Gwen's talked about the ones who need a lot of help, and those tend to be the people we focus on when we think about developmental disabilities. But the fact of the matter is that the help you need is the help you need, whether it's a lot or a little. And if you need a lot and you don't get it, really bad things are going to happen. If you only need a little bit, it means you can live very independently, very much like the rest of your friends and neighbors. But if you don't get that little bit of help, you are going to fail. Your independence will collapse, and you will end up needing more help, more support. So our job is to make sure that everybody gets the amount of help they need, whether it's a lot or a little, because that's what's going to allow them to live in our community and succeed. It doesn't make sense to give them more than they need, but it doesn't make sense to give them less, or to say just because they only need a little that they can get away with, they can skate without it. They can't. You know, they still need that little bit. And so there's always the balancing act between providing services to the people who need the most with knowing that there's a whole other group of folks who are not going to succeed if they don't get the little bit that they do.
It's just like in school, we talk about kids who have learning disabilities. And if provided the right educational opportunity, those kids can learn and can be very successful. So you want to provide the support that people need to, as we say, the ARC's mission is to encourage and celebrate the potential of people who experience disabilities. Encouraging the potential. It's there. Everybody has potential. And we love to show that success of their potential. So we encourage and celebrate it when we achieve it.
Right. And I'm just reading the same line here. I printed some stuff off of your website, and that is your mission, and you envision a community in which all people have the right to, you know, experience life to the best of their ability.
Right.
And that also depends on changing attitudes in the community. And you mentioned your values at ARC, core values. Could you
We have
about
three
that
core values, and they are integrity. We expect all staff and people to operate with the best of integrity. That just means doing the right thing. And innately, we know what the right thing to do is. So we ask the neighbors of the people who live next door to people to do the right thing, be good neighbors. We ask those coworkers on the job to do the right thing and give a little support, a little hand for help when somebody needs it. And I think that's how we're reaching that vision of someday the community will so embrace people with disabilities to live among us that we'll be out of a job. That's our real ultimate goal. Someday everyone will be walking alongside each other in a way that doesn't require the ARC to have this enormous system. I don't think that's going to happen real quickly, but everybody has a role to play. Relationships with people with disabilities are still the kind of the last frontier. People with disabilities often do not have friends. And I think that's partly because people don't know maybe how to reach out and be friends. But that can be the most enriching thing in your life is to become a friend of somebody with a disability. We call it side by side. We've had people come and say, well, I just kind of want to get to know somebody. And they have the most fun and they get back more than they ever give by kind of like being a little, going along on activities, being the big brother to somebody.
Wouldn't that, the ARC provide a circle of people where their friendships would be possible?
Yes. Yeah. We love to introduce people to several individuals so you can pick common interests. That's how we become friends. People who like to knit gather together. People who like to go hiking gather together. And you do it based on an interest in the same activity. And so sharing activities with people with disabilities who also love to do all those kinds of things is the first step in friendship. Mm-hmm. Inviting somebody over to have dinner or to even watch a movie or to meet the kids and have popcorn. I mean, it's all about just spending time with someone, and that time is a big investment.
Do you provide, like, a social outlet, you know, parties, music events, or that kind of thing?
Our rec center that we talked about has the big dance every month. Our Halloween dance is the best one in town. Everybody comes in costume, and you don't have to have a disability to enjoy a Halloween dance. But we also have other regular kinds of events around holidays, whether we have a Mardi Gras party and we have the most recent one was putting on the Ritz and everybody dressed up because that was so much fun to be able to dress up and dance.
Sounds wonderful. I was going to, we don't have that much time left, but I wanted to hit a couple of points. And one of them is a financial future. What about, say, people with disabilities, maybe they are out on their own? But the family is sort of standing by and watching, and, you know, they're there to help, and, you know, services such as the ARC are there to help. But what happens if, you know, parents pass away?
And, you know, I think that's a sacred trust for the ARC. We were founded by families. We focus on families, and we like to ensure families that we will always be there. I think there is a need for a structured organization to be there when families are not there anymore and siblings may not be there anymore. And we have been the last family. We've been there from the point of beginning. Often parents predecease their loved one, and we have had those celebrations of life. That has happened for us at the ARC. And we've talked a little bit about the financial impact. You said that. You know, there is no family that really, not very many families that have sufficient funds to provide the kind of support that someone with a disability is going to need. We need that societal community commitment to them. We need organizations such as the ARC and our sister agencies that have the infrastructure to provide that support. The homes that we provide are built and able for people to live in that otherwise a family couldn't possibly create. So I think the role of the community provider is very important.
And how, getting back to funding, is there a secure source of funding for the ARC? Because
fortunately, we are we're very solid. It's an organization that's been around for a long time, and we use our resources wisely. I say that we're a nonprofit, and we do have the business revenue from Value Village, and we have the generosity of the community, which has helped us to fill in the gaps where we don't have funding. Medicaid is our biggest source of funding, and all the community agencies do rely upon Medicaid.
And to clarify that, the clients you already have on Medicaid are okay, but
yes,
it's the waiting list and the moratorium that
yes
is holding up the people that are waiting for services.
That's correct.
A couple of other things, and this is going to go right out my head. Funding. How about, you mentioned the Value Village and the call-outs. My question just popped in and out of my head. So I would like to talk a little bit about substance abuse.
Yes.
Do you deal with substance abuse at all?
Yes, we do. Actually, it you have to have it in addition to a developmental disability or a mental illness. And it's that what we call kind of a co-occurring situation. People don't present with just one issue. Quite often, they have multiple issues. You could have a mental illness, a developmental disability, and a substance abuse issue. And we're probably the only provider that can deal with the fact that it's got all three components.
Did you have a look of wanting to say something?
No, I could say that, I mean, one of the things that we have discovered over time is that people with developmental disabilities can have the same sorts of problems that other people do. They can have a mental illness. It used to be that no matter what happened to a person with a developmental disability, it was blamed on the disability. Nobody said, oh, well, maybe they're depressed. Maybe we should go, you know, see a mental health professional. That happens more often now. We're more aware of that possibility. And the same thing is true with substance abuse. Folks with developmental disabilities are not immune from the sorts of vices or problems that everyone else in the community has to deal with, whether it's smoking or drinking or drugs or what have you. And I'm not saying smoking rises to that level, but it is a vice. You know, it's something that we all know we shouldn't do. And so they're dealing with those same things just the way the rest of us are.
And how about the growth of, that was my question, the growth of Anchorage? We have now such a polyglot population, many, many languages. Is that posing a problem?
It's a challenge. It's a challenge, and we do have to seek interpreters for the various language to help us. There are online kinds of connections we can get for the languages that are very unusual, but some of our staff are bilingual, and we take advantage of people who can speak other languages on staff.
Actually, that is one of our greatest needs, is for staff who speak some of these different languages. So any way we can get that message out would be very useful.
Staff in general, that we have opportunities for jobs all the time.
Oh,
there
do.
Are never enough people to do this work. Mm-hmm. Funding aside, there are just a great need for people who love people to become engaged in this work. And with seniors aging, we have more and more need for people to be involved in the human service world. It's
okay.
A wonderful career.
We put it out there. The ARC is looking for people who've got bilingual abilities.
Yes.
Well, we are just about running out of time here, so I'm going to say thank you to our guests from the ARC of Anchorage, Gwen Lee, Executive Director, Patty Saunders, who is their Development Director. You've been listening to Community Forum. I'm Ellen Lockyer.
Community Forum is a production of KSKA's News and Public Affairs Department. Opinions expressed are those of the guest, host, and callers, and do not represent the views of KSKA, the licensee, or the underwriters. You can subscribe to free podcasts of Community Forum on our website at kska.org, where you can also find links to additional information on today's topic, including all the websites mentioned on today's show. If you have questions or comments concerning this program, write to us at 3877 University Drive, Anchorage, Alaska, 99508, or email communityforum@kska.org. CD copies can be purchased by calling 550-8400 during regular business hours. This is KSKA, Anchorage.